Hi, Drumstick. Oh, Drumstick, I think is going to be very happy.
I feel confident because I'm the best player in the world.
And we had the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen.
Did you do any PEDs?
No.
Did you do anything that they accuse you of?
No.
People are laughing at us all over the world. They think we're stupid, and we are. I mean, we're being led by stupid people.
That I needed to arm myself, that I needed to protect Reva and I, that I needed to get my gun.
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Owen Paul James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder.
There's massive, massive sports betting going on.
We won with poorly educated. I love the poorly educated.
I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for Offside. Now, here's your host, TSN Informs legal analyst and Canada's favorite lawyer, Eric Macramella.
He's a lawyer.
Welcome to the show that is Offside. As you heard, courtesy of that voice in the sky, I'm your host, Eric Macramella. Steve King Kong Bunda is away this week. I want to welcome all the listeners, the billions upon billions of listeners that listen to the smash hit show that is Offside in Ottawa, Edmonton, and Montreal, as well as those who pick up the show via their preferred podcast platform. We're on the show today, talk Bobby Hall, the Rangers canceling Pride Night. Should Connor Bedard refuse to go to Arizona if he is indeed drafted by the Coyotes? Of course, my Donald Trump loser of the week, but I do want to start with this. We make a lot of talent, don't we? You see a kid on a hockey rink at the age of 3.5 zipping around. It's like, wow, that player is so talented. They're going to go to the NHL, right? You see a kid on a piano at the age of 4, tickling those ivories like, oh my goodness, look how talented that child is. Look how talented they are. The world is their oyster. We make so much of talent that, frankly, we overvalue talent. Talent is nothing without determination. Talent is an inborn quality which makes us capable of achieving success. But determination is what crystallizes that success. Talent is ability without effort. That's all it is. You may be talented at baseball. You may be talented at hockey or basketball or playing the guitar. You may have an innate ability that makes it easier for you to master an instrument or a sport. But all it is an innate ability. Determination is what crystallizes that talent and results in success. Determination is a combination of ability with a lot of effort. And so if you want to translate that innate ability that you have, whatever level it's at, it doesn't need to be the very best or highest level of, quote, talent. What you need is determination. Determination and perseverance. People will say, oh, you know what, I can't start my own business because I'm not talented enough. Or, you know, I never won an Oscar as an actor because I'm just not talented enough. But we get tricked all too often because when we see success, we typically only see the finished product. I remember walking into math class. I'd be in grade 7 and I walk into a math class and the one that just exited was like grade 10 math. And look up at the blackboard, it's like, I don't understand any of that. Wow, these guys must be geniuses, right? We get tricked because all we often see is the finished product. Some virtuoso playing the violin. We go, oh my goodness, look how talented that person is. I could never do that, right? You see a Connor McDavid play. It's like, oh my goodness, so talented. I could never do that. Yeah, there is some level of inherent talent. But without determination, without perseverance, you have nothing. You have nothing. There are two things I've always thought that are overvalued. That's talent and intelligence. If you work your butt off, if you are determined and you get to your 10,000 hours, you are more likely to achieve success than not. Talent guarantees absolutely nothing, and anybody who relies just on talent is going to fail. They are not going to achieve success. There are many talented people that are not determined and they've accomplished nothing. There are many determined people with a low level of talent and they have accomplished nothing. A lot. And so this brings me to Tom Brady, because with Tom Brady, we didn't see the finished product, which is the most successful and decorated NFL player of all time, likely the greatest quarterback in NFL history, at a time where there's great parity between not only teams and athletes. What he did over the past 20 plus years is astonishing. But Tom Brady was drafted 199th overall in the 2000 draft. Who was drafted before him? Matt Bowen, Gillis Wilson, Lamar Chapman, and Windrell Hayes. Hayes had 6 receptions for 126 yards in his career. Tom Brady was not supposed to succeed. Tom Brady was supposed to fail. He was a throwaway pick by the New England Patriots. But Tom Brady possesses, and possessed at the time, determination and perseverance. He's not the most athletic player in the world. Look at the combine. I think he ran the 40-yard dash in about 3 minutes. He's not terribly mobile as far as a quarterback goes. No one would look at Tom Brady and go, you are the greatest athlete I've ever seen. No, you would say you went 200th overall basically because you're not the greatest athlete we've ever seen. We're going to give you a shot. Maybe you'll make the practice squad, whatever. But Tom Brady, while maybe not possessing a high level of inherent talent, that is ability without effort, he possessed an unparalleled level of determination, of doggedness. He gave all of himself. When other players were just having fun and a good time, he was working. Right? This is the guy that put in the all-nighters. He didn't end up being Windrell Hayes. He ended up being Tom Brady, the greatest player in NFL history and arguably one of the greatest athletes in North American sports history. 15 Pro Bowls, 17 AFC East Championships, 13 AFC Championship games, one NFC Championship, 10 Super Bowl appearances, 7 Super Bowl wins, 5 Super Bowl MVPs. He's the all-time NFL leader in quarterback wins, passing yards, TD passes, career passing completions. In the postseason, he holds records for appearances, games started, wins, Super Bowl appearances, Super Bowl wins, completions, passing yards, passing touchdowns. 88 passing touchdowns. That's insanity. Game-winning drives, 14. In the playoffs, 14 game-winning drives. Fourth quarter comebacks, 9. He's got 9 fourth quarter comebacks. It is an astonishing level of success for a player, for any player, if a player had been drafted first overall and achieved all of what Tom Brady has achieved, we'd be shaking our heads, the greatest of all time. But Tom Brady was drafted 199th overall after Matt Bowen, after Gillis Wilson, after Lamar Chapman, after Windrell Hayes. People we've never heard of. Unless you work at Walmart, you've been greeted by one of these guys. So when Tom Brady announced his retirement, that's the first thing that came to mind. He willed his way to success.
Good morning, guys. I'll get to the point right away. I'm retiring for good. I know the process was a pretty big deal last time, so when I woke up this morning, I figured I'd just press record and let you guys know first. So I won't be long-winded. Like, you only get one super emotional retirement essay, and I used mine up last year. So really thank you guys so much to every single one of you for supporting me, my family, my friends, my teammates, my competitors. I could go on forever. There's too many. Thank you guys for allowing me to live my absolute dream. I wouldn't change a thing. Love you all.
And that was Tom Brady announcing his retirement on Instagram. And I do love nowadays how, you know, we're done with using a publicist to release whatever statement we want to. We just do it ourselves. I love that. That's how things have changed. But that's an aside. That's a digression. You know, I look at Tom Brady, and another athlete that kind of comes to mind is the coach of the Montreal Canadiens, Marty St. Louis. This is a guy who was undrafted. This is a guy who willed his way into the NHL to be a fourth liner, then willed his way to the third line, then worked his butt off to become a second liner, then a first liner. Then he ultimately willed his way to the Hall of Fame. This is why when the Canadiens drafted Juraj Slafkovský and the rest of the players in the most recent NHL draft, Marty St. Louis said, hey, congratulations on being drafted, but now the work begins.
what he's saying is, I don't care how talented you are. Talent will take you nowhere. Put your 10,000 hours in and you have a shot at being an everyday NHL hockey player. Be determined. Persevere. Seek excellence. That's what Marty St. Louis did. Someone who willed his way to the Hall of Fame. That's an incredible story. I mean, I remember I met Marty St. Louis years ago when Brian Burke invited me as his guest to the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And I'm in the elevator at the hotel, and a guy walks in, not terribly tall, and in shorts with a squash racket in his hand, and that was Marty St. Louis. I looked down, and yes, his legs were tree trunks. Each of his legs were bigger than my body, right? So from a talent perspective, from an inherent ability perspective, he had tree trunks for legs. So that's why he was playing hockey. But the reason he went to the Hall of Fame is not because he had tree trunks for legs. It's because he had the biggest heart, probably the biggest heart in that elevator. He had the biggest heart, right? He willed his way to success. For Tom Brady, not only did he enjoy such tremendous success on the football field and a level of success we will never see again, in part because there's so much parity now among athletes and it's so hard to win. I mean, when you look at the list of accomplishments that I just rhymed up before, aren't you just left shaking your head? How does one person accomplish all of that? But off the field, it translated financially for him. His career earnings were $475 million across his entire career, and that includes earnings off the field of $180 million. That's over about 22 years. So that's endorsements, licensing fees, appearances, memorabilia. When he was with the Patriots, he didn't do a lot of endorsement deals. But towards the tail end of his time with the Patriots and his time with the Bucks, he did more of that. In 2022, his salary was of $18.4 million, but he made $40 million off endorsements. He had endorsements with Under Armour, Hertz, FTX, Christopher Kloss, Wheels Up, T-Mobile, Fanatics, Subway, among other brand owners. And those brand owners saw great value in Tom Brady. And what's really interesting is that, you know, you go to a hockey game. Let's say you go to a Sens game or Canadiens game or Oilers game, whatever it is, and you have, you know, 18,000 people there. Most of them are not rabid sports fans like you may be. They may be an Oilers fan or a Canadiens fan or a Sens fan. They may be kind of a hockey fan. Some are not fans at all. They're just there because they want something to do and want to spend $25 on a beer. But they... A lot of those fans are not hardcore fans like some of you may be. And so when you mention names of athletes, a lot of them are like, I don't know who you're talking about. Like, I don't know who Devontae Adams is, right? I don't know who Tage Thompson is. But with Tom Brady, his awareness level, and you can measure the extent to which a player is known. It's kind of a Q rating. And then that informs brand owners as to how much they should pay that player, in part based upon how aware the public is of that player. Tom Brady's awareness level is incredibly high. It's at 91%. 91% of Americans know who Tom Brady is, and I believe 52% of women have a crush on Tom Brady. He's in the same realm as Tiger Woods, Serena Williams, Michael Jordan, and LeBron James, right? So he's in this exclusive tier one club of athletes, of American athletes, whose awareness level is above 90%. And that's why he made $40 million on endorsements. Or that's one of the reasons. But backpedaling, he was able to achieve great success because he understood either intrinsically or by way of his parents or both. I think parents have a big part to play in how hard people work, to be honest with you. My dad was a workaholic as a surgeon, and I think I kind of inherited some of that, good or bad, from him. Not surgery. I don't do that. I didn't have the talent level to do that. I'm just kidding. But it's Tom Brady's ability to lock in on the task at hand, to set goals, and to pursue those goals in a determined, dogged fashion. And I have found
Tom Brady to be inspiring in that vein. Because we are so often told, aren't we? As kids and from our childhood, you can't do that. Oh, you don't have the talent to do that. You don't have the ability to do that. And look, it's like I used to tell my sports law class, the University of Ottawa, the Faculty of Law, I go, look, whenever you accomplish something or you hope to accomplish something, most people don't really want you to succeed. People that have your back, your parents for sure, maybe half of your siblings. And that's really going to be it. The rest of the people want you to fail because they have not enjoyed success. And so what Tom Brady's story tells us is that you can. You can do it. You don't have to be Windrell Hayes. You can be Tom Brady. There's a way to do that, but you just have to be willing to put in the effort and not disqualify yourself from any given path because you feel you don't have the inherent talent or the inherent ability to do it. It's really fascinating in sports, and I think that a lot of parents have seen this in the way that they enroll their kids for a whole bunch of things. I know that my son Daniel has been in a skating lesson since 2 o'clock this morning, only working on his outside edge as he skates backwards, singing the national anthem. Okay, I think next week he'll be working on the inside edge of his left foot while skating forward and singing the theme song to Happy Days. Sports has changed, hasn't it? In the old days, and that's 20 years ago, teams and scouts and parents alike would identify the ceiling for a particular person, their athletic ceiling, and say, that's as far as you can go. The way sports has changed is we identify the ceiling and now let's push it up. That's how sports has changed. And there's a massive booming business as a result of that. I'm sure you might have some of your kids in skating lessons or some extra, you know, time on the diamond with a coach, right? The idea now is that we don't say that a child's athletic ability is absolute and capped. The position that we now take is that, well, we can push that ceiling up. It's not absolute. It's fluid. Now, you can maybe only push it up so high. Absolutely. I've done a lot of youth coaching and every kid is different. But kids who you think can't accomplish things, if you work with them, give them the tools to succeed, and then they are coachable, and then they are willing to engage and to fully commit, they pass the kids who are, quote, more talented. You see it all the time. Tom Brady had an astonishing career. All of his accomplishments, they just leave you shaking his head. The takeaway for me is he's telling everybody out there, it's not about talent. It's about determination. Go out there and get it if you want it. Coming up next, we'll talk Bobby Hall and the Rangers' Pride Night debacle. I'm Eric McRamell, and this is Offside on the TSN Radio Network.
Although I love Tom Brady, I got to tell you, I do love Tom.
Welcome back to the show that is Offside. I'm your host, Eric McRamella, TSN and Forbes legal analyst. I want to welcome back all the listeners in Ottawa, Edmonton, and in Montreal, as well as those who pick up the show via their preferred podcast platform. Thank you to the billions upon billions of fans of this show that gather in the streets with their transistor radios to listen to Offside. And by the way, if you're listening to the show in your prison cell, thanks for your support. Keep working on your appeal. Unless you killed someone and you're a horrible person, then please stop working on your appeal because you scare me. All right, shifting gears. Sports fans love their heroes. And anytime you say anything that's not positive about the hero, they get really upset, even if the negative comments or the non-positive comments represent the truth. And so Bobby Hull passes away. And he was a hell of a hockey player. He's led the league in goals 7 times, led the league in points 3 times. He won 2 MVPs. We know his story, incredible slap shot, powerful skater, just a tremendous goal scorer, and some would see him as a somewhat revolutionary player. And all that is stuff you have to mention when he passes away. But you also have to tell the entire story. He was a hell of a hockey player on the ice, but off the ice, he was a terrible human being. He was accused of beating two of his three wives. He abandoned his kids. He praised Hitler. Quote, Hitler, for example, had some good ideas. He just went a little bit too far, end quote. Right? He thought that there were too many black people in the U.S. and that the black population in the U.S. was growing too fast and that genetic breeding was a worthy idea. No one asked if it would be fair to label him a racist. He responded, quote, I don't give a damn. I'm not running for any political office, end quote. Joanne McKay divorced him, his first wife, in 1980 after an allegedly abusive relationship. She said in an ESPN interview in 2002, I took a real beating, describing an assault that took place in 1966 during a trip to Hawaii. She said, Bobby just picked me up, threw me over his shoulder, threw me in the room, and just proceeded to knock the heck out of me. He took my shoe with a steel heel and proceeded to hit me in the head. I was covered with blood. And I can remember him holding me over the balcony. I thought, this is the end. I'm going to die, end quote. She also said that Bobby Hall threatened her with a loaded gun in 1978, and they divorced in 1980. And one time after that, he came back to their house in North Vancouver and kicked in the door. He was charged with assault in 1986 in an incident related to his second wife, Deborah Hall. That charge was dropped because he didn't want to testify. But in that incident, he also assaulted an officer to which he pled guilty. Interestingly enough, his daughter, Michelle, is a lawyer who specializes in what? Well, cases related to domestic violence. And she has said that's in part because, or it is because, what the family and her mom endured. It's okay. It's okay to talk about the man as a whole when you are referring to Bobby Hall or anybody for that matter when they pass away. Yeah, there is this reflexive reaction to be incredibly positive, right? You don't want to say anything negative because that person isn't there to defend themselves. We all feel that way, and there's some level of discomfort when someone is being eulogized and there are negative things being said about them. And in the case of Bobby Hull, terrible things. But my goodness, the vitriol that I have seen online from people is ironical to begin with. They attack people that are telling the story of Bobby Hull as a man and not just as a hockey player, because that's part of the story. But the vitriol directed at these people is, again, say it's ironical because these are the same people that don't want you to mention stuff that's negative, and they themselves are incredibly negative. But they feel perhaps as though you are violating the memory of one of their heroes. Well, that's an understandable reaction. But when you have someone who has praised Hitler, that apparently didn't like blacks, who beat up two of his three wives, who has an incredibly despicable history when it comes to family and values, that's part of the story. That's part of the narrative. And so there are people out there right now, those who are ready to go, how can you be saying this? Eric, this is just so ridiculous and inappropriate. No, it's not. You know what's inappropriate? Beating up your wife, right? Beating her up to the point where she's covered in blood and you hang her over the balcony. Yeah, that probably warrants a discussion when you're talking about Bobby Hall. This is why the Blackhawks ultimately, I know it took him so long, but they are the Blackhawks, hashtag Chris Beach, why the Blackhawks cut ties with him as an ambassador, right? And this is why his kids don't have a relationship. I mean, Brett Hall was asked about his dad years ago, and he said, I don't even have his phone number. He drank, Bobby Hall drank a lot. He was awful to his wives. Apparently was not a great dad either, was an absent dad. And so these are things that you need to discuss when you talk about Bobby Hall as a man when he has passed away. So for all those people yelling and screaming at me
Well, you know what? There's more for you to yell and scream at me, and it's as follows. Yeah, that's right. Let's talk the Rangers Pride Night that was canceled. You know, last week I talked about Ivan Provorov and how Ivan Provorov, the Flyers defenseman, faced a lot of backlash for his decision to boycott the Flyers Pride Night to support the LGBTQ plus community. And when I talked about it and addressed it, well, I thought I needed to provide context, because it's important, because Provorov himself provided context. What did he say? What was that context? I'm part of the Russian Orthodox Church. Well, that's important context here, because the Russian Orthodox Church is not a fan of homosexuality. They have compared same-sex marriage to Nazism, said that the invasion, or the, well, they don't call it the invasion of Ukraine, we'll call it the invasion of Ukraine, is justified because Ukrainians support same-sex marriage. Russia has got all these laws against homosexuality. Anybody who is a homosexual or helps or assists other homosexuals, they could face legal repercussions in Russia. Of course, the Russian Orthodox Church and Putin are one and the same. And so there's a clear history when it comes to Russian Orthodox Church. And of course, after I said that, I got a lot of emails, some to my personal email account at the law firm, just blasting me. How can you say that? And there was one person, though. One person came after me. And then I said, look, I didn't, all I provided were facts on the Russian Orthodox Church. I didn't provide any opinion. I said, Provorov is part of this church. This is what the church stands for. And that's why Provorov's stand against homosexuality should be a concern. And this individual, probably the only individual in all the years I've done the show, where he stopped and said, you know what? Maybe it's just me overreacting because I felt a religion was being attacked, not my religion, he said, but a religion, and reflexively, effectively, I want to protect it. But he goes, they were just facts. You're right. So oftentimes, with things that matter to us, we react emotionally with sometimes not a lot of thought. But what I'm trying to do here is just give you the objective information, the facts. That's what the Russian Orthodox Church stands for. So I thought maybe as a result of the backlash that the Flyers faced, that we wouldn't see something like that again. Well, no, the Rangers scrapped their entire plans to wear rainbow-themed warm-up jerseys last Friday for Pride Night at MSG. When they were asked about that, they simply released a statement. The statement is as follows, quote, our organization respects the LGBTQ plus community, and we are proud to bring attention to important local community organizations as part of another great Pride Night. In keeping with our organization's core values, we support everyone's individual right to respectfully express their beliefs. What they're basically saying is some of the players, or a player or more, was uncomfortable with wearing the jersey, the Pride jersey, the rainbow-themed jersey, and for that reason, they canceled it, the event. So here's the thing, is that Provorov and others, I don't know who on the Rangers was uncomfortable, they stand behind this notion that they have the right to express themselves, and that right to express yourself and to express your own personal views absolves you from any level of scrutiny or scorn. Respecting someone's right to express themselves, I want to be clear about this, is not absolute. It's not the end of the discussion. That's the thing. I mean, they hide behind this freedom of expression shield to say what they want. But that doesn't somehow legitimize those views simply because, well, they're my views. The key question to ask is, what are they expressing and what is the outcome of those views? That's what you need to focus on. What are they saying and what's the impact of what they are saying? Because if they are taking a position that promotes exclusion based upon membership in a group, if they are expressing views that marginalize a minority group, then that position is bigoted. It's a bigoted position. Entitlement to views doesn't automatically legitimize those views. You have to assess the outcome of those views. Freedom of expression is not absolute, and it should not be used as a shield. When those views being expressed, be it expressly or implicitly, are bigoted. Provorov's views were bigoted. The Rangers presumably scrapped Pride Night because one or more players were uncomfortable with the event. I feel like I'm having this discussion like in 1925 or in the 1950s. I mean, we should remember that there have been millions upon millions of people that have been harmed over the years because of the majority's religious teachings that have determined that a minority group's civil rights should be limited, if not eliminated. Religious teachings were used to support the horrors of slavery, deny women the right to vote, deny loving interracial couples the right to be married, deny black people their full and equal place in our society, deny minority religious groups equal rights. It's astonishing. It really is that we still haven't learned from these horrible mistakes that it is wrong to use religious teachings to dehumanize and to marginalize minority groups, groups that are oppressed. Marginalized groups. Honestly, I was just left shaking my head that the Rangers canceled Pride Night. Right? It's happening now in real time. And this is the opportunity to say, look, you may have your views, Provorov or any Ranger player for that matter, but understand simply because you possess these views and you feel they're somehow legitimized by way of your religious teachings and your church, that they are reasonable views, that they are fair views, and that they don't inflict harm on others. And they do inflict harm. The outcome of that type of position, it doesn't just end with players not wearing the warm-up jersey on Pride Night. It extends beyond that because it's part of a general philosophy. It's part of a general approach to homosexuality. It is harmful, and ultimately it's something that teams need to say and the league needs to say, I'm sorry, we're going to do it. And if you don't take the pregame skate, you don't play in the game. That's fine. You've made your decision. As adults, you make decisions and you stand by those consequences. So you remove the player from the pregame skate. That's the solution. All right. If someone is uncomfortable with homosexuals being afforded equal rights under the law, if they are uncomfortable with the whole notion and idea of homosexuality, then maybe they need to be educated rather than say, you can take a pass here because that's what you believe. That's what you believe. Freedom of expression is not absolute. You got to take responsibility for things that you say and that you think. All right. Why don't we shift gears here and let's talk Connor Bedard. Connor Bedard is a generational player. He's potentially a transformational player for a franchise. And we're seeing a number of teams here that are doing what they can to try and get Connor Bedard. And that includes, well, at the top of the list, the Blackhawks traded away Kirby Dach, traded away DeBrincat and his 41 goals. And they're now in penultimate place in the NHL, tied with Columbus, but Columbus, I guess, has the tiebreak. The bottom five teams are Columbus, Chicago, Anaheim, Arizona, and San Jose. And so right now Columbus stands the best odds of getting Connor Bedard, but fourth in that list is Arizona. They're just 4 points out of the basement here, and Columbus and Arizona does have a game in hand. Chicago has 3 games in hand, for the record. My question here is, if Connor Bedard is drafted by the Arizona Coyotes, should he say thanks but no thanks? Should Connor Bedard refuse to go to Arizona? This is an ownership group that was evicted out of Glendale. Evicted. I don't know why the media doesn't use that term. That's what happened. From a legal standpoint, they were evicted. They didn't pay their rent, so they were told to leave. And now they play in front of 4,700 fans. They even tried to make it sound like it's 5,000 fans, as if that like kind of cures things. No, it's 4,700 fans. And by the way, part of those are student tickets sold at student prices, which I don't know what is nowadays, probably like 15 cents or something, right? Because we've got to give the students their cheap tickets, right? Since, of course, they're playing at Arizona State University, ASU. It's a franchise that has seemingly had Jacob Trickin on the trade block, I think, for 15 years, even before he started playing hockey. But more importantly, it strikes us as a rather dysfunctional franchise, and more importantly, in a market that doesn't seem to appreciate hockey. And if you're Connor Bedard, you have spent your life dedicating yourself to your craft and doing all you can to be the best hockey player you can be. And the hours that must have gone into that, my goodness, right? I mean, you've got to be dedicated. You've got to be committed to excellence and to hard work if you want to become the player he's become. And he didn't just happen to be born this way. He had it in a high level of innate talent. Yeah, probably. But he took it to a whole new level by virtue of his hard work and commitment to the game. And there's no other really profession other than athlete where you're told where to work. So I graduated from law school. I'm not drafted by a law firm. Someone listening here, you know, they graduate from the journalism program at Algonquin, and they're not drafted by a news media outlet. Same thing with an accountant, you know, same thing with a truck driver, whatever the teacher, whatever the profession is, you have that choice. But in sports, you don't have that choice because leagues, of course, want to promote competitive balance. And so the best player goes to the worst team. Don't you think that Connor Bedard should have an opportunity to feature his high-end skills in a hockey market? Don't you think he should have that opportunity to monetize those skills by way of endorsements in a hockey market? And that market's not Arizona. And frankly, it's not Anaheim. Chicago? Yes. Great spot for him. Vancouver? Yes. Great spot for him. And I guess he's from there. Montreal? Yeah. Another great spot for Connor Bedard. So Anaheim? No. Arizona? Oh, awful. Columbus? Sure. Why not? But if you're going to go to Arizona and you're Connor Bedard, it has to give you pause. You have to say, wait a minute, from a business standpoint, from a visibility standpoint, from a profile standpoint, is that where I want to go? Is that where I want to spend, you know, at least the next 3 to 5 years? Or do I want to say, look, that's not where I want to be. That franchise is dysfunctional. It plays in the desert and has been a problem franchise since its inception. And I'd rather go to a business that is well run. I'd rather at least go to a market that loves hockey where I have the potential to really monetize my skills. Yeah, you say he goes to the desert and he can make hockey exciting, right? Like when Gretzky went to Los Angeles, but it feels like it's a little bit different here. He's kind of going into the desert. There's not a lot of hockey fans there, right? Yeah, you could energize the fan base and it could become something. That's a lot of coulds and maybes. If you're Connor Bedard and all that you've invested in yourself, maybe you say, hey, you know what, to Arizona, thanks, but I think I'll take a pass on this one. All right, when I come back, my Donald Trump loser of the week. I'm Eric McRamell, and this is Offside on the TSN Radio Network.
You are a rude, terrible person.
Suffering from a thing called loser's remorse. She lost.
Well, Rosie's a loser. She's always been a loser. We have losers. We have losers.
And Cher is somewhat of a loser. She's lonely. She's unhappy.
Look, Glenn's a loser, okay? Just so you understand. This guy's a serious loser.
Welcome back to Offside and listeners in Ottawa, Edmonton, and in Montreal. I'm your host, Eric McRamell, TSN and Forbes legal analyst. So you heard the music. It's time for my Donald Trump Loser of the Week, a segment that has billions upon billions of listeners worldwide. People stop me in the street and say, who's your Donald Trump Loser of the Week this week? Please tell us. We need to know. Please hold me. I'll tell you, but I won't hold you because I don't touch strangers. I don't even touch my wife. All right. Well, that's a different story because we're married. So who's my Donald Trump Loser of the Week this week? Well, it's the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. Preface this by saying I'm a Habs fan, but it's the Montreal Canadiens because they keep trying. This trying is really getting on my nerves as a Habs fan, okay? It was kind of cute to begin with. Hey, look at that. Everybody's trying and trying to win these games. But enough is enough, okay? I've had enough. I mean, this team has suffered a lot of injuries, and despite that, all the games, for the most part, has still been competitive. Sean Monahan's out. Caden Gooley's out. Slavkovsky's out. Gallagher's out. Drouin's out. Jake Evans is out. Armia's out. Cole Caulfield's out. Yeah, I know some of those players, it's a good thing they're out. But still, you have a lot of injuries. And so you, with all these injuries, you end up calling up players. They're like, calling up AHL players. You know, Canadians should be positioned to lose some games. So you call up a guy like Raphael Harvey-Pernard. What happens? In 7 games, he's got 5 goals, 1 assist. 6 points, and is a plus 4. Like, this isn't good for the Canadiens when it comes to the prospects of getting Connor Bedard, all right? Right now, they're in 26th place in the NHL, okay? They still have to leapfrog San Jose, Vancouver, Arizona, Anaheim, Chicago, and Columbus. Canadiens need to have a legitimate shot at Connor Bedard. They haven't had a foundational superstar. The Canadiens haven't had a foundational superstar since they drafted Guy Lafleur in 1971. That's 52 years ago. 52 years ago! Habs fans want it. They need it. They need someone to take them out of their seat, right? They haven't had that in so long. And the Canadiens keep trying. they're going to make it far less likely to get the first overall pick in Connor Bedard. And I don't even understand how they're actually, like, winning the way they are. I mean, they're 29th in goals for, 30th in shots on goal, 31st on the power play, 27th of shooting percentage, goals allowed 28th, shots on goals allowed 28th. They're 29th in the penalty kill. Like, you look at the numbers, they shouldn't be doing what they're doing. They've won 20 games. No, they at this point, they should have won like 15 or 16, just like the Blackhawks and Columbus. Maybe you should won 15 games, right? Look, as a Habs fan, I just want to see them have a shot at Connor Bedard. If not him, then Fantilli or Mishkov. Just like really, you know, franchise-changing players. You know, yeah, maybe if they don't finish in top five or six when it comes to the lottery, then they'll get a guy like Will Smith. Keep my draft player's name out of your mouth. But a guy like Will Smith, it's not like a franchise-changing player. Canadians need that. They're not very good, but despite the fact that they're not good and the numbers demonstrate that they stink this year and they can't do anything really very well, despite that, they've already won 20 games. And look, there's like what for the Canadians? Like 31 games left in the season. It's very tough to make up ground going up, that is trying to make a playoff spot. It's also tough to make ground going down to try and catch Columbus and Chicago and Anaheim. But the Canadians have to do all that they can, because if you want to sustain success long term, you need foundational superstars, one or two. You just need that. Like, having superstars doesn't guarantee you win a cup. Auston Matthews, Connor McDavid come to mind, Leon Draisaitl, Mitch Marner. But not having foundational superstars pretty much guarantees you will not win a Stanley Cup. You need those players in your lineup. So for the love of God, as a Canadiens fan, I say, please stop trying so hard, Montreal Canadiens, okay? Maybe don't try as hard and maybe lose many games and do so convincingly, please, as a favor. All right, and if not, I appreciate the effort, and you're all fine young men trying your best. I appreciate it. All right, so for that reason, the Montreal Canadiens, because they've been trying too hard, they're my Donald Trump loser of the week.
Nobody's stronger than me.
Nobody has better toys than I do.
Nobody builds walls better than me.
There's nobody that's done so much for equality as I have.
There is nobody that respects women more than I do.
The sale of the uranium, that nobody knows what it means. I know what it means.
Nobody knows more about trade than me.
Nobody knows the system better than me. Which is why I alone can fix it.
All right, we're flush out of time. Thank you for listening to the big show. I'm Eric McRamell, and this has been Offside on the TSN Radio Network. Chat soon, and don't you dare forget, I love you.